It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. This week in the world of politics, two big national stories and one significant court case here in Illinois. In a few minutes, we'll hear from Hannah Meisel of Capital News Illinois, who's been covering the perjury and obstruction of justice trial of a top aide to former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. But first, just north of Illinois, most of the top Republican presidential candidates gathered in Milwaukee on Wednesday for the first debate of the primary election season. I say most because, of course, former President Donald Trump was not among them. But he was still in the news this week, turning himself into authorities in Georgia to face the fourth set of criminal charges filed against him in the last year. As usual, here to help us make sense of it all this Friday is Linda Kenyon, who covers Washington politics and our home state congressional delegation for Illinois Public Media. Because she has other commitments during our live program today, I spoke with her earlier this morning. Linda, good to talk with you again.
Well, thank you, Brian. It's good to be back.
So let's go ahead and start with former President Trump turning himself in last night, Thursday evening, at the Fulton County Jail in Atlanta. Yeah, I was going to say, what an extraordinary moment in our history. But in fact, it's becoming almost ordinary. I wonder what jumped out at you about the scene in Georgia.
You know, it was such an unusual situation in the universe of unusual situations. Not only has a former president been booked, and by the way, his mugshot was taken for the first time, but this is the fourth time the former president has been booked. He's already been processed in the hush money case in New York, the classified documents case in Florida, the election subversion case in Washington, D.C., and yesterday was the Georgia election subversion case. This one differs significantly from the others, just if you look at the booking procedure alone. The former president was booked, fingerprinted, his booking photo was taken, he went through the whole process. At the jail, a former president walking into a jail. In all of the previous bookings, he was able to go through that process in a courthouse. So this is very different. Another thing is, this jail is notorious. It has been cited recently for the death of an inmate in a rather gruesome way. Apparently, this inmate was, and I'm sorry for those who are maybe eating right now, but he was eaten alive by bed bugs. And there has been so much controversy over this jail, the sights, the smells, the overcrowding. The former president clearly was not in that jail for very long. The process took about 22 minutes, but nonetheless, it had to have been a very jarring experience for him.
And yet we saw him strike this defiant pose in his photograph. I noticed, I think the New York Times had a story this week about how many of his co-defendants were smiling in their photographs. Does this, I guess, in the Republican circles, he is still projecting defiance. He is still sort of trying to play this off as it can't bother him.
Yeah, you know, that was a very interesting pose in the booking photo. He has been using it on his social media as a fundraising tool. It has been very effective so far. And he is defiant. He spoke to reporters very briefly after leaving the jail and then motorcading back to his private jet at the Atlanta airport, where he said, "I have done nothing wrong. And this is a travesty. And this is election interference." And he said that, you know, he will continue to fight against it. And took aim at his political opponents, saying that it was all, you know, something that they were doing to him, and that, again, he has done absolutely nothing wrong whatsoever. And so this is what we've been hearing from the former president from the very start. But it's very hard to overlook the fact that he has now been booked and charged in four separate cases. Some are state cases, some are federal cases. But nonetheless, even one would be a milestone in American history. But four is kind of unfathomable.
Yeah, yeah. No, that I think that is the right thing. And it is worth remembering that this is not normal, even though it's becoming, or, you know, there's a danger of it feeling normal. Let's turn now to Milwaukee for a moment. I mentioned former President Trump was not at the Republican primary debate there. But his presence was still felt, even though he wasn't actually there, right?
That is true. In fact, this was a debate moderated by two Fox News hosts, and one was Bret Baier, and he said, and he used this term, he said, you know, there's one person here, let's just dispense with this right away. He said, the elephant in the room. He used those terms. And of course, Donald Trump does loom large over pretty much everything in Republican Party politics. But the fact that he wasn't at the debate by his own choice really made him loom even larger, if that is possible. He was counter-programming. He had said before the debate that there was nothing in it for him, essentially, that he was by far and wide the Republican front runner, and that there was no reason for him to debate, and that all they were going to do was attack him, and he was not going to, you know, abide. So he was counter-programming with Tucker Carlson, former Fox News host, in an online interview where he basically aired his grievances and blasted the other Republicans who are vying for the nomination, who are challenging him.
I'm trying to imagine how all this would have felt 10 years ago, 20, 30 years ago, if, I don't know, Mitt Romney had skipped some of the presidential debates because he was turning himself in on his fourth set of criminal charges, or Bob Dole, or any of the other, Barack Obama, for that matter. I can remember a time when this was not normal. There are a lot of Americans, though, who are growing up with this. I wonder, from your perch in Washington, do you see our political norms undergoing a permanent shift, or at least a generational shift?
You know, there's two schools of thought about that in Washington. One is that this is just temporary, and the other is that this, of course, is permanent. Now, there were some Republicans in the U.S. Senate who voted against convicting the former president after he was impeached in the House, not once but twice, which was the start of the "this is not normal" school of thought. And they said, and one in particular, Senator Susan Collins of Maine, after the first impeachment, said, "I believe that the president has learned his lesson." Well, apparently that was not the case, because then he was impeached a second time. And now he's been indicted in four separate criminal cases. And most of them are basically self-inflicted episodes, you know, brought on by the former president himself in terms of the election interference, in terms of refusing to turn over classified documents that belong to the federal government that he said belonged to him, you know, in terms of all of the other cases against him that have just compounded his situation. And so while a lot of Republicans are still very supportive on Capitol Hill of the former president, privately, they tell us that they're very concerned that that this is, you know, that if they don't support him, then they will lose the base of the Republican Party, the very conservative voters. But if they do support him, they're concerned that they're going to lose the independent voters, and they do need the independent voters to keep them, you know, on the top, in certainly in the House, and if they want to win back the Senate. And then, of course, there is the White House.
Linda Kenyon covers national politics for Illinois Public Media. Thanks again for being with us on our Friday program, Linda.
Thank you, Brian.
Now to state politics, where the big story this week has been the trial of former State House Speaker Michael Madigan's top aide, or at least former top aide, Tim Mapes. After about 5 hours of deliberation, the jury returned a guilty verdict on two counts Thursday afternoon. Hannah Meisel has been following the trial in Chicago. She covers state government and politics for the nonprofit Capital News Illinois. In order to accommodate our schedules, we taped this conversation Thursday evening. Hannah, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
So Tim Mapes, not a household name unless you're one of the several hundred or so people like Hannah and I who spend way too much time following the ins and outs of state government. But remind our listeners, who was he? How important was he?
Well, Tim Mapes was extremely important. For 25 years, more than, he was Speaker Madigan's chief of staff, his, you know, right-hand man. And he had risen, he had consolidated power, not just, you know, as chief of staff, but also he spent two decades as the executive director of the state's Democratic Party under Madigan's chairmanship. And then for the last 7 years of his career, he was also clerk of the Illinois House, where he, you know, kind of made session days in Springfield run in the manner that Madigan wanted him to. He was very important. And, you know, something that came up at trial several times over is that Mapes had this sign in his office in Springfield that said, "No one gets in to see the wizard, not no way, not no how," of course, adapted from the movie Wizard of Oz. And repeatedly, prosecutors would ask witnesses on the stand, "Who did you understand the wizard to be?" And the answer, of course, was always Madigan.
He was the gatekeeper. So what were the charges against Mapes? He wasn't actually accused of corruption as the House Speaker and other people in the Speaker's orbit have been.
Right. He was brought in front of a federal grand jury in March of 2021. This is the same grand jury that was investigating Madigan and his inner circle, that of course also brought charges to others in Madigan's inner circle, including Mike McLean, a longtime influential lobbyist in Springfield, who was also kind of Madigan's other right-hand man, a close confidant of the speaker's, someone he really trusted. Now, McLean has been convicted earlier in the spring. We had talked, of course, in this so-called ComEd 4 trial. Feds alleged that McLean and others from ComEd had basically bribed the speaker with jobs and contracts for the speaker's allies in exchange for favorable legislation in Springfield. Madigan and McLean also stand trial, at least scheduled for next April, on bribery and racketeering charges. So Mapes was dragged in front of this grand jury 2 years ago, and he was put under an immunity order because he had, prior to that, basically invoked his Fifth Amendment right, or said he was going to. And so he was put under an immunity order, told that he would not be charged with anything as long as he told the truth to the grand jury. But instead, the feds said that he lied repeatedly, he obfuscated, and, you know, he did it out of loyalty. And so that's why he was charged with perjury and obstruction of justice.
And you're being very careful. The Fed said it, and today a jury of his peers said it as well, that that was in fact true. What was the defense that Mapes was making for why he, as again the jury found today, he lied to this grand jury?
Well, you know, he actually had a few kind of lines of defense. One was this, you know, thing about memory. You know, the defense started out their opening statements with saying, you know, basically, imagine if you were you're standing in line, you're waiting to get into your high school reunion 10 years later, and all of a sudden you were given a pop quiz about the people that you knew in high school. You know, maybe you don't actually remember who was homecoming queen or, you know, the quarterback, but if you could see your yearbook, maybe you'd remember. You know, so they've made this memory defense. They also brought an expert witness about that. But in closing statements yesterday, I thought it was very interesting. There's kind of a shift that one of his defense lawyers made, that kind of for the first time explicitly floating the possibility that maybe Madigan and McLean really did, you know, engage in these criminal acts, but Mapes just did not know about it. And you can't, of course, remember what you never knew in the first place.
Okay, Hannah, in the hours after news of this verdict broke, we started to see reaction pour in from Republicans who they're in the super minority in Springfield. I don't know that we need to focus on them. More interesting to me, frankly, were people who used to work in the House Democratic office or in the political organization that Mapes was ultimately in charge of running. What did they have to say?
Right. So Mapes was ousted. He was forced to resign from all three of his jobs in June of 2018. This is, as people might remember, the height of the hashtag MeToo movement. And Mapes was publicly accused of sexual harassment and bullying by a former member of the clerk's office. And, you know, that's a person who is very low profile, certainly not someone that, you know, even in the Capitol, not really someone that was very well known at all. And her name was Sherry Garrett. And this afternoon, she put out a statement. She said, "Through the course of the trial, we've learned about the ways that Mr. Mapes and the rest of the inner circle of that organization worked to discredit those of us who were speaking out about our toxic work environment. My experience speaking out about the sexual harassment I endured in 2018 was painful, and more painful was knowing that there were countless others like me who were too afraid of Mr. Mapes to come forward and speak their own truths. I hope that those individuals feel some relief today, as I know I do. And then also, you know, prior to Sherry Garrett coming forward and Mapes being ousted, in early 2018, a 28-year-old campaign worker named Elena Hampton, she came forward and said that Madigan and his organization didn't do enough to respond to her complaints about a former coworker in the same political organization, Madigan's 13th Ward operation, sending her months worth of unwanted text messages, unwanted romantic advances. Her public accusation kicked off months of response from the speaker's office. Those were all themes that were explored in this trial. And she put out a statement today. She's actually at court today. And in her statement, she said, "I've always said that my experience was the symptom of a toxic culture and that it started at the top. Tim Mapes was as close to the top as it gets."
Okay, Hannah, we're almost out of time. What's next? What is the next big phase in this sprawling corruption investigation?
Well, those who were convicted in May in the ComEd 4 trial, they are being sentenced in January, although McLean, we're not quite sure because he's also, like I said, a co-defendant in that Madigan trial set for April. And that is going to be a huge trial, definitely the biggest trial that Illinois politics has seen since the trials of Rod Blagojevich more than a decade ago.
Well, Hannah, I'm sure you will be there. Thank you. You've done great work on this, and I appreciate you sharing your reporting with us on the 21st show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Hannah Meisel covers state government and politics for the nonprofit Capital News Illinois. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st show. Stay with us.